Yeah. Since you have not taken a vow of perpetual celibacy. Please repeat. Svaya Bhuva Man.
Svaya Bhuva Man.
Continue. A wise man.
A wise man.
I heard that you were prepared to marry. Please accept her hand.
Please accept her hand.
Which has been offered to you by me.
Since you have not taken a vow
of perpetual celibacy. The principle of brahmacharya is celibacy. There are two kinds of brahmacharis. One is called naishtika brahmacharya, which means one who takes a vow of celibacy for his whole life. Whereas the other, the upakurvana brahmachari, is a brahmachari who takes the vow of celibacy up to 25 years of age. Then, with the permission of the spiritual master, he enters married life. Brahmachari is student life, the beginning of life in the spiritual orders. And the principle of brahmachari is celibacy. Only a householder can indulge in sense gratification or sex life, not a brahmachari. Svayambhuva Manu requested Kadarma Muni to accept his daughter, since Kadarma had not taken the vow of naishtika brahmacharya. He is willing to marry, and the suitable daughter of a high royal family was presented. Aham tvasrindamam vidvam vihartam samujitam adhastam upakurvana pratam pratigrahaname. Svayambhuva Manu continued, O wise man, I heard that you were prepared to marry. Please accept her hand, which has been offered to you by me, since you have not taken a vow of perpetual celibacy. Om agyarata marandasya yanangana salakaya chaksuram miratamyena tasmaya shi gurave namaha. Sri Chaitanya manubhistam japitam yenam bhutale Svayam Rupagata Mayam Datati Svam Vatantikam. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Adaita Virara Shivasri Gaur Bhaktivrindam. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So here Svayambhuva Manu is presenting his daughter. Very beautiful daughter, extremely beautiful, to be married with the great sage Kadarma Muni. So Kadarma Muni was a very powerful yogi, very powerful mystic, very powerful sage. And still we see that he was attracted to householder life. So Bhagavatam means so many instructions are there in Srimad Bhagavatam, practical instructions. Practical instructions how we should conduct our social life. Spiritual life does not mean just conduction of spiritual life. It means also a social affair, because it is complete. Spiritual life must be something complete. So completeness means wholesome, something which is very wholesome. So there are four orders of life. Krishna explains that these four orders, Chaturvarna, that they are created by me. Four orders of social life and four orders of spiritual life also. So in order to, if you like, attract different types of conditioned souls to different paths. Prabhupada said in the Vedic culture, 75% of the population was celibate. Isn't that extraordinary? 75%. That's why in Vedic custom, a husband could have more than one wife, because there were many women who needed husbands. So brahmachari means celibate life, vanaprastha means celibate life, and sannyas means celibate life. So 25% was engaged in householder life. So householder life is very important also, because it gives one the opportunity, as Prabhupada says, to taste the gula. So Prabhupada said there are two types of people. One, they can renounce the gula. The gulabjam. And the other, they can bite it and then give it. Just like if you, as brahmacharis, many of us remember, we could eat many gulab jams. And as we get older, it becomes more and more difficult to eat so many. So this eating of the gulab jam is also very important, just as much as renouncing the gulab jam. It is two kinds of ecstasy. And very difficult to understand how you can become happy by renouncing the gulab-jamun. Isn't it? It seems like a contradiction. Can you be happy by renouncing the gulab-jamun? Or can you be happy by eating the gulab-jamun? So there are two types of gulab-jamun. There's a material gulab-jamun and there's a spiritual gulab-jamun. One time we were in Prabhupada's room and he was eating we offered him, kachori. So Prabhupada was eating this with incredible relish and he was hitting his knee. And he was saying, this is why I've gone to the spiritual world, to take Krishna's kachoris. So we can eat in the material world, or we can eat in the spiritual world. So these two things are there. Happiness is there, pleasure is there in the material world, and pleasure is there in the spiritual world. But the difference is that one is limited and one is unlimited. If we want to engage ourselves in the limited, then we have to realize its limitations. So in order to realize the limitation of the material world, we require training. Training is required. Otherwise we become bewildered if we're not trained. Just like an engineer is dealing with electricity, but he's trained how to deal, isn't it? It's not that you send him out and say, okay, here's a spanner, here's a screwdriver, and here's a wrench or whatever, and there's a huge pylon. Just run up there and grab some of that wire and cut it. Or stick your hand in a 50,000 volt box. No. He has to know very precisely. If you notice engineers, particularly electrical engineers, they're very precise in how they work. I've noticed, very meticulous. They do everything very according to the book. They're not speculators. You don't speculate with electricity, isn't it? You can mess around with a lot of things, but you don't mess around with electricity. Because if you're not trained, if you're not prepared, then you can get a big shock, isn't it? You can get a big shock. So the material world is also shocking. It's a shocking place. It is full of shocks. And because we are mudha, the ass also gets a shock, isn't it? How does the ass work? The ass works by very hard labor. And he's foaming also. But every now and again he gets a big shock on his backside, which makes him move. So this shock treatment is there. So Prabhupada said, just like the material world is beating us with a stick. So are we being beaten by the stick, or who's holding the stick? We should understand that point, isn't it? All of us, we are being beaten by a stick. But is the stick beating us, or is someone holding the stick? That is the question. Who's holding the stick? So in the material world, we want to enjoy. This is natural. Prabhupada said it is completely natural to want to be intoxicated, to want to have illicit sex. It's completely natural. There's nothing unnatural about it at all. If you study material energy, you'll find wherever you go, I've gone everywhere practically, and I've seen the pigeons still chase each other. It's not that the African pigeons don't chase each other, that only in Bhaktivedanta manner they chase each other. Pigeons are chasing each other everywhere. Everyone is attracted by sex desire. And this is very natural. It's a natural emotion. It's completely, it comes from the soul. The only unfortunate thing is that in the material world it is perverted. It is perverted through this concrete energy, this material energy. And therefore, the sex desire is pervertedly manifested in a perverted form. Perversion means something which is not correct, something which is not natural. So in one sense, it is natural to have sex desire, but at the same time, it is not natural to fulfill that sex desire with material objects. You see? Sex desire is also there in the spiritual world, but in its pure form. So in the pure form, we cannot understand it, because we've never been pure. You see? Listen. You can only understand something pure when you've been pure. If you're not pure, how do you understand the pure? So therefore, that subject matter we cannot really understand. But this shadow example is very good, because in the shadow, there is some resemblance to the form. Just like if this microphone is reflected on the ground, you can see the shape of the microphone. But the usage will not be there. You can't talk to the ground. You can't talk to the shadow. You have to get the real thing, the reality. So in the transcendental realm, actually, this same pleasure potency, Ananda Moya Vyasa, is coming there from Krishna. Krishna is enjoying Lakshmi Shahastra Satasambraman Sevyaman Govindam Aripushtam Tamam Bhajami. So in the spiritual world, everything is female. Lakshmi Shahastra, everything is female. We are also female. We are not male. This male consciousness is artificial disposition. The actual nature of the living entity is female, Prakriti. And Krishna is Purusha. He is Govindam Adi Purushottam. Adi Purushottam means that he is the enjoyer. Adi. What is the meaning of the word Adi? Adi means original. He is the original enjoyer. And everything else is enjoyed by him. So one time they asked Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, how you remain Naishtika, Brahmachari? Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was Naishtika. He never passed semen in his life. Not once. Not even in dream. So one time one of his disciples, they said, how did you remain Naishtika, Brahmachari Maharaj? So difficult. In Kali Yuga, who can remain Naishtika? So he said, because every time I see a woman, I think, oh, such nice gopi for Krishna. Such nice gopi for Krishna. You see? Different consciousness. It's not that he's not thinking, but he's thinking, oh, here, some nice gopi to be enjoyed by Krishna. So this sex psychology, it should be understood. Because in most religions, sex is a very horrible thing. Oh, sex. Ooh, very bad. It's what in the Christian religion they have this idea that, I don't know, very vague philosophy, but anyway, they have some idea that temptation, that you're tempted by the devil. The devil is there. The devil is telling you, do this, do that. But they don't understand, just like they asked the Pope, is there any sex in heaven? So he was bewildered. Is there any sex in heaven? He didn't know what to say. So is there any sex in heaven? The sex psychology, wherever you go, it is all pervading, isn't it? All pervading. In all the species, sex life is there. Attraction, male, female, the predominator, the dominated, the domination. One wants to dominate the other, male wants to dominate female wants to enjoy male. This propensity is there. So where is this coming from? This is coming from God. So in Krishna consciousness, it is absolute philosophy, absolute, because we can offer everything to Krishna. And what is the highest offering is to offer one's body to Krishna. You see? To offer one's body to Krishna is the highest thing. In most spiritual things, they're thinking, oh, I should offer God this, I should offer God that. Isn't it? But to offer the body to Krishna. Therefore, these affairs between the gopis and Krishna, they are worshipped as the highest pinnacle, the highest devotion to Krishna. The gopis of Vrindavan are the highest offering of love for Krishna. Because the body female body means that which gives the most pleasure to the male. Most pleasure. So we have to give most pleasure to Krishna. So therefore this gopi body is very nice, Madhurya Ras. But we should not approach that area. That area is not in bounds because we are in material consciousness. So in the material world, we are imitating Krishna, so we want to enjoy all the gopis. So Prabhupada said that don't imitate. Just like one man, he was listening to Srimad Bhagavatam and he heard this reciter mentioning Radharani. He thought, oh, I used to have a girlfriend called Radha. So he was thinking of that girlfriend, how he was enjoying with the girlfriend, Radha. So don't go to Bhagavatam class and try to enter into these confidential affairs. Therefore they're called confidential. They're not for our subject matter, because one cannot give his body to Krishna until one has given his heart to Krishna. Heart means one has to surrender. So the nature of the mind is the center of all sensual activities. So the mind is udara atmanatmanam. Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita that one must deliver oneself by the mind. One must deliver oneself by the mind. The mind is always searching after sense gratification. We want sense gratification. So Vedic civilization means culture. Regulated sense gratification, not animal life. What is the difference between animal life and human life? The only difference between an animal and a human is one is regulated and one is not. An animal cannot be regulated only by force. You can regulate an animal by force. But regulating the mind is not possible. If you find animals, whatever animal, as soon as there is contact between male and female, immediately agitation is there. Of course, there's some natural regulation in nature. But the point is that this attraction is there, but the human being is the only species who can regulate sex life properly. So therefore, Krishna says to Arjuna that one must deliver himself with the help of the mind and not degrade himself. One should not degrade himself. Mind is the greatest friend of the conditioned soul, but also the greatest enemy as well. So the mind has two functions. Mind, attracted to sense gratification, becomes a great enemy in the path of spiritual life. So how to engage the mind? We have to engage the mind man-mana bhava mahabhakto. Krishna says that you engage the mind in my devotional service. Become my devotee. You offer homage and worship unto me, and thus you will come to me. So we have to engage our mind in Krishna's service. Then we will be free from all sex life. Free. We can be completely free from sex life because Krishna is ananda. Ananda moya vyashat. Sex life means pleasure. Ananda. We like ananda, just like sometimes people would prefer to have a good meal than to have sex. Isn't it? I read one report. It said, which would you prefer, sex or a good meal? Some people prefer a good meal. So it's ananda. You get ananda from sex life, you get ananda from having a good meal, some people get ananda from having a game of golf, or watching television, going to the movies, having children, having a nice car, having a house, having lots of money. Some people, they like more money than, they don't want a woman, they want money. Ananda. So different types of ananda. So Krishna is the reservoir, ananda moya. He is the reservoir of all pleasure. So if we concentrate our mind on Krishna, then there will be no more disturbance of the indriya, of the senses. So therefore Krishna says one has to regulate the mind. So regulation means to take some vow. One must take a vow. Without vow, there is no question of spiritual life. All the ashrams are based on vows. Prabhupada one time was saying, he said, the problem with you Westerners is you don't know the meaning of vow. You don't know what it is to take a vow. This vow is very, very important in Vedic culture. Once one has taken a vow, he can never break his vow. Just like Bhishma Dev. Bhishma Dev had taken a vow that he would never marry. He was also a Naishthika Brahmachari. He never engaged in sex life. So he was very powerful. Prabhupada said if you don't engage the mind in sex, you become very powerful. Very powerful, because one has controlled the mind. And also in married life, there is also vow. So married life is also brahmachari life, as long as one keeps to the sacred vow. That vow is that also celibacy. Celibacy means where the mind is not, followed. Where one is pure in the mind. So there are two types of pleasure. What we call prayas and srayas. There is prayas, immediate pleasure. In the material world, everybody wants immediate pleasure. And srayas means ultimate pleasure, ultimate gain. So immediate gain, ultimate gain. So in the material world, we want immediate gain. We are after immediate gain because we are vacant. We are in need of something. We are in need. What is the desire? Because there's some need. Just like if you go to a restaurant and eat a big meal, then you don't come out looking for another restaurant. There's no need. That need, that tihara, that desire to gain something, this is there. The nature of the conditioned soul is always how to gain something. How to gain. Isn't it? We always want to gain. How can I get the maximum service from this situation? We always want to extract some service in the material world. Something should be gained by our endeavor. Something should be gained by our service. Something should be gained by that object. So the objects become the facility for gain. But in spiritual life, everything becomes an object for Krishna's sense gratification. Everything. Everything becomes an object for Krishna's sense gratification. Just like one time, one household, a couple, they went to Gaurakishore Babaji Maharaj. He was very, very strict for renunciate. He didn't have much time for material sense gratification. But anyway, they came to Gaurakishore Babaji Maharaj, and they were a very nice couple. So they said to the husband, said, "Oh Maharaj, we've gotten married and there's a very difficult part. Want your blessings. What should we do?" So he was giving them advice. He said, "So, he said that you have your wife. So, your wife, you should have deities. The wife should worship the deity. And you should also worship your wife." So he's very shocked. "Worship my wife?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "You should acknowledge that your wife is the servant of Krishna. Therefore, she's very sacred." So, that is the consequence, that even the wife is there, but the wife is also a servant of Krishna. So, a servant of Krishna means something very dear, something worshipable, something very sacred. So, wife can become very sacred, and husband is also very sacred, because servant of Krishna. So therefore, one can actually become free from this inclination, this desire to enjoy the transitory material world. And it says, Krishna says, for him who has conquered the mind is the best of friends. But for one who has failed to do so, his mind will remain the greatest enemy. So in the material world, the mind is the main focal point. A mind is always hankering for sense gratification. A mind that is regulated in Krishna's service. A mind that is anxious. Devotee is also in anxiety. Devotee is also very anxious. Devotee is full of anxiety how to please Krishna. So the mind becomes a great source of pleasure. Even though it appears actually that the mind is suffering so much, devotee may engage himself in so many austerities to please Krishna. And this is a very nice example because Kadarma Muni was living in a hut on the bank of Bindu Sarova. He was living in a hut on the lake. He had no, where was he looking for a woman? He didn't go looking. He wasn't going to discotheque, nightclub, and seeing if there's a nice girl there he can chat her up and bring us back to his hermitage. There's no discos, clubs, or meeting parties in the jungle. So he's sitting in jungle. So someone may say, "Oh, look at that poor fellow, stuck in a jungle, in a hut. He hasn't been very lucky." He doesn't have a BMW or a nice car, nice house. But the great Swayambhuva Manu, he came there. King, he is a very powerful king, but he came there with his most beautiful daughter. She was so pretty that even the Gandharvas were falling out of their airplanes. So how attractive. Even the Gandharvas, they have Gandharva means heavenly form, heavenly, very beautiful bodies. But they were falling out of their airplane. As mentioned later on, he found his airplane. So how beautiful. So he's in a hut. Hut is not a very attractive place for the daughter of a royal family. Royal family means big royalty. He's not a small king. He is actually Manu. Manu means the Manu dynasty, Manusana. Man is descended from such a king. So he's much better than situated than Prince Charlie or any of these guys. He's got a bigger palace than Buckingham Palace. But he's coming in a humble attitude, very humble, because Kshatriya means that he's protector of the sages. So he came to, he knew that this Kadama Muni is a very great sage. So he came in very humble. He brought his beautiful daughter. And she was attracted to him, not because he had a big muscular body, or big bank balance, or he didn't have very much prospects, isn't it? For a woman, generally they look at the husband, has he got any money? If he's good looking, he has some money and some prospects, then he's an attractive catch. And otherwise, what is the use of a fellow who only owns a mud hut on the bank of a lake? But she was attracted by his qualities. So that means it was a different culture. Vedic culture is a different culture. Of course, now everything is based on superficial attraction. The man, he is putting on some nice suit and some external car and some aftershave and some money and this and that, and the woman is attracted. These are all very external things. And then she finds out that the man is also an ugly fella inside. His heart is ugly. So then he finds out that she's also pretty ugly inside. So no one can stay with each other. There's no attraction. There's no, therefore marriages now, I think 1 in 4, they're finished. Because the attraction is not there. Because attraction is to qualities, to the qualities of the person. Therefore, Kadama Muni was very attractive to Devahuti. She was very attractive. And we see that also he was practicing very austere yoga system, because she became very emancipated and very neglected in that situation. But we can see, because he was a very powerful devotee, he had no problem to exercise his mystic power. So devotee is not, Prabhupada sometimes when he used to talk about devotee, he used to say, Mara, he used to say that it doesn't mean that he's impotent. No, devotee is potent. So Kadama Muni showed his potency, because he was able to manifest a huge aerial chariot, huge city that could fly without any restrictions. And he could also expand himself, I think, in 9 forms. 9 forms. So she got 9 husbands. It's a good catch. So therefore, in every way it's auspicious. Oh, that thing which appears very inauspicious, I think that if you had it as a novel for a movie, it wouldn't appear very auspicious. The daughter of a big powerful king goes to the jungle with the snakes and tigers and all sorts of creepy crawly things, lives in a mud hut, and meets what would have been a very austere yogi who only had a loincloth. Not much to offer, but the story becomes so much clearer when you see the power of the devotees. So therefore, one may appear in the material sense to be without. Just like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was explaining about Raghunath Das, he said, had all the 8 mystic cities in unlimited quality. In unlimited quantity. Unlimited quantity. Just see. And yet, he was totally negligent of these. So Raghunath Das was living at the time of Lord Chaitanya. He was a son of a multi-millionaire. His wife was only 16, my goddess of fortune. But he was living in Jagannath Puri, and he was very, very renounced. No one can understand the renunciation of Raghunath Das Goswami. So he would stand, first of all, he was feeding the Vaishnavs, because his father sent every month so many hundreds or thousands of rupees. So he was feeding all the Vaishnavs. Then he rejected that money. So then he was simply taking his food, waiting at the door of Jagannath temple. So the Brahmins, when they're coming out, they would give him some prasad and he would go away. And the Lord Chaitanya inquired from Swarup Dhammadeva. He said, I don't see Raghunath at the gates of Jagannath Puri temple. Where is he going? So he said, oh, no, he thought that I'm like prostitute. I'm standing here waiting for my prasad. This is not good. So then after that, he was taking the food when they would wash their plates. They would wash their plates. So the rice was coming down the drain. Can you imagine? If you found someone at the drain, taking the rice and washing it and eating? Huh? Can you imagine? So later on, Lord Chaitanya gave him fire. Oh, Raghunath, where is he? I said, no, he stopped that. He thought also that is not good. So what is he doing now? He is taking the prasadam after the cows won't eat it. Jagannath Puri, they would throw the prasadam when they couldn't sell it or give it away. They would throw it to the cows. So after the cows would reject it, then Raghunath Das was taking that prasadam, and that was, he was washing it and eating it. So he was keeping it in his room. So Lord Chaitanya came one day, and noontime, he came into the room of Raghunath. He said, where you are keeping this prasadam? We are keeping this prasadam. So Raghunath became very anxious. So he tried to stop Mahaprabhu. No, please, Mahaprabhu, don't take this prasadam. Don't take this. This is very neglected. Please, please. No, he said, no, Lord Chaitanya. Oh, how are you going to say neglected? This is Jagannath prasadam. You're saying it's neglected? So he became. So immediately Lord Chaitanya took that prasadam and went into ecstasy. So Jagannath is there in the temple, but Jagannath is coming to Raghunath Das Goswami to take his prasadam. Jagannath is getting every day, how many offerings? One time 64. I think it's 64 offerings. Is it? 56 offerings a day. But he's running out of the temple, coming to the small kutir of Raghunath Das to eat that prasadam. Because it's the attitude of the devotee that attracts Krishna. So Raghunath Das Goswami, Mukti Siddhanta Saraswati said he had the unlimited, the cities, all eight mystic cities in unlimited quantity. But here he is eating the rejection of the cows, even the cows. Now normally cows in India, you know, they eat even sacks. But if they're not eating the prasad, then they must be pretty old. So that is the renunciation, but such renunciation is not possible. We should not try to imitate. I don't want to find anyone in there with the cows today taking the leftover. But at least we should understand that where Raghunath is getting his pleasure, he's getting his pleasure from chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So Raghunath Das Goswami was chanting daily, lakhs of rounds, and he was also bowing 1,000 times a day. He was paying his obeisances to the Vaishnava. 1,000 times a day. How many times a day you pay your obeisances? Put your hands up. How many? More than 10 times, anybody? More than 5 times. Put your hand up. More than 5 times a day. 3 times a day. Every day, regularly. Okay, so 1,000 times a day, Raghunath Das Goswami is paying his obeisances. So we are so advanced, we are more advanced than Raghunath because we don't need to pay our obeisances. We may think that this is so, but actually we can see this is the mood of Vaishnava. So Vaishnava is very dear to Krishna, so Krishna gives the devotee everything. So Kardama Muni got everything, beautiful wife, big mansion. Not like this boring wood houses, in boring wood. No, big mansion, and no need of any extraneous piping systems or anything. And it was also could fly like big jumbo. Sometimes these big people, they have a big jumbo all to themselves. But this was much bigger than any jumbo because it was a city. And it could fly throughout the universe and enjoy the celestial gardens of the demigods. So just see how fortunate Devahuti was. She thought she was losing, but she gained everything. So in the material world, that which appears to be a loss is actually a gain. And in the material world, that which appears to be a gain is actually a loss. So one has to see like that. Okay, Srimad Bhagavatam Mahapuranam Ki Jai. Any questions quickly?
Thank you for the classroom
instruction.
In the class you mentioned how the material world of the entity is getting the stick. And you asked the question, who's holding the stick? So I'm asking that question, who's holding the stick? And is there a difference for someone who is not conscious of God, someone who is, and someone who is particularly Vaishnava?
No. For the non-devotee, then Maya is holding the stick. And for the devotee, Krishna is holding the stick. So we should understand, as Krishna says, Mahatmanas tumam partam daiva prakritam ashrita, that the Mahatmas, the devotees, they're under my protection. So Krishna also has a stick, but he's hitting very nicely so the devotee doesn't become too distracted in the material world. So whenever a devotee gets distracted, usually he gets a bit of a bang from Krishna, just to knock him back into shape. For the non-devotee, then material energy is active. Because in a sense, there is no difference. Of course, material energy actually acts wonderfully to take all the conditioned souls back home, back to God. But in the case of the devotee, Krishna takes particular interest because they have taken shelter. But stick is there for the devotee and the non-devotee. Because if you read the Bhagavatam, you see that even the Pandavas, who were most dear devotees of Krishna, they were intimately connected with Krishna. It said they went to the Himalayas after taking a great lashing from the material energy, from the enemy. Actually, the word is your enemy, from the material energy. So a great lashing is there. So this lashing is also very nice for the devotee. He enjoys to get beaten because we can never take shelter of this energy. So if this energy gives us a hard time, then that's very good. That's kindness, actually. Because we can't take shelter here. Just like if you're going to go into a house that's going to explode, and someone says, get out, get out, get out, you fool, and pushes you and kicks you, he's your greatest friend. You may say, hey, I want to go in the house. What are you idiot? What are you doing to me? And the next minute the house goes boom. Isn't it? So therefore, in the material world, we are getting slapped by Maya, but Maya is saying, get out of here, get out, what are you doing here, you idiot? Get on, get out. We're saying, no, I want to enjoy here, I came here to enjoy. No, get out, you fool. So we think, this is my enemy. You know, I want to enjoy, what are you doing to me? I came here to enjoy and have a good time. And you're chasing me away, you're kicking me in the head, giving me a headache. But that's kindness. Maya's kindness. Personified. Therefore, she is actually our greatest friend. We should consider that how fortunate, just like how fortunate we are that Maya is kicking us in the head. But we want her to give us a nice bed so we can sleep there, so we can enjoy it. But she's kicking us in the head. So this is nice kindness. She's our friend. And for the materialist, this is very bitter medicine. Very bitter. Oh. Look what happened to me. Oh, such an unfortunate thing happened. Therefore, I hate God. I hate God. See, so they don't know what is the stick. The stick is there for the devotee and the kami, but both see it differently. When a devotee gets some inconvenience, he thinks, oh, Krishna, you're so kind. Why you are so kind to me? You're not letting me forget you. You've taken everything. You've beaten me around the head. And then for the kami, this is, oh, look what has happened. So they become angry. The devotee never becomes angry or frustrated. Yeah.
Thank you for your past In chapter 9, you actually answered my question, the last question. It's still a factor of the spirit of it. In chapter 9, you said,
fishes in our lives, actually, the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam, we can turn up our own fishes for baby protein, material, spiritually, everything. You can find those two.
But she lost her husband, not Sarah's fishes.
But anyway, it was nice. Yeah. She was satisfied with her situation. Sometimes we come as devotees, we come to try to be devotees, we're not with materials, we're trying to be devotees, and we do our best to surrender. We surrender blindly, we do as we're told, you know. And things don't become so auspicious in our lives. And very often we end up, some become more strength to Krishna, and some do exactly what you described as materialists. We become angry, we lose our faith.
Mm.
So my doubt is, what I can't understand is that anyone who wants to try to take shelter in the world, even though in a nearby condition, how is it that Krishna allows us to get to the situation where we're tested or lashed so severely we give up our faith, that actually everything becomes inauspicious in our lives?
Yeah, you see, the thing is that Maya is there to test. The whole material energy is a test, because the living entity has come here out of misuse of independence. So therefore, in order to be allowed, if you like, to be allowed to re-enter the spiritual plane. Spiritual plane means one has to be purified. Purified of the anathas. Anathas means unwanted things in the heart. These must be gotten rid of. So, when we come to Krishna consciousness, there are four types that come. And Krishna mentions particularly those in distress, those who have lost something, they want to gain some knowledge, inquisitive, those who are after money. So we come to Krishna for different motives. And all of these things have to be tested. Material energy is there to test. Now the test is not to draw you away from Krishna. The test is, like when you, Prabhupada always liked that word, unalloyed steel. Unalloyed. Unalloyed means where there's no other mixture. There should be no other mixture. So, in devotional service, there should be no other mixture. This mixture means the dharma, artha, kama, moksha. So, in order to purify the devotee, then we are put through so many different tests. And that test has to be there because this is the tempering of the steel, to temper it so that one is actually ready. Even in this lifetime, if one does not actually pass the test, then next lifetime again, the opportunity will be there. It is never, as Krishna says, there is no loss or diminution in this path. One is not, just like if in this path you get to, let's say you get to 10%, and the next life you begin again, 11%. No loss. But the choice is always there. The devotee always has the choice. And Krishna always protects also. There are so many examples where we look at the example even of Ajamil or whatever. There are so many examples where one has completely rejected Krishna. Maybe in last life we also rejected Krishna. We didn't pass the test. Again we have opportunity, and again we reject, again we will get opportunity. Krishna is not unkind. But we may, due to some anathas, one time Prabhupada was asked, why do people leave Krishna consciousness? And Prabhupada said, to enjoy sense gratification. There's no other reason. There's absolutely no other reason for leaving Krishna consciousness than to enjoy sense gratification. The excuses may be millions. Oh, my guru fell.